14. Marcy gasped as Wayne slid into the shallow grave, flopping down square on top of her. It knocked the wind out of her again. Wayne grunted, and the gunshots stopped a moment later. Still trying to recover, Marcy stared up at the black sky and swirling mist. It took her a moment to realize that the mist was frozen in place.
"Speed bubble?" she asked.
"Yeah," Wayne said, then groaned, twisting to the side and putting his back to the earthen wall so he wasn't lying directly on her. His shoulder glistened with something wet.
"You've been hit."
"3 times," Wayne said, then winced as he turned his leg.
"No, 4.
He sighed, then took a bite of his sandwich.
"So,
give me a sec," he said. She twisted in the grave and peeked up over the earthen lip. Nearby, DeChamp fell slowly, as though through molasses, toward the ground, blood spraying from several gunshot wounds, droplets hanging in the air. A vanishing muzzle flash from the darkness revealed the origin of the gunfire. A group of figures on the path, shadowed and nearly invisible. Bullets zipped through the mist, leaving trails.
"How'd you know?" she asked.
"They made the crickets stop," Wayne said. "DeChamp must have sold us out. I'd bet wax his hat that he sent that boy to fetch these fellows."
"The set was here first," Marcy said, her stomach sinking.
"Yeah."
Wayne poked at one of the holes in his shirt, wiggling it around to check that the wound had healed. With his other hand, he stuffed the last bite of sandwich into his mouth, then joined her in peeking up over the lip of the grave. Above, a lethargically moving bullet hit the invisible edge of Wayne's speed bubble. In an eye blink, it zipped across the air, barely a foot over Marcy's head, before hitting the other side where it slowed down again. She cringed belatedly. Anytime something entered a speed bubble, it was refracted, changing trajectory. While it was unlikely one would get bounced so radically that it would point downward toward them, it was possible. Beyond that, Wayne's bend alloy burned extremely quickly. He'd have to drop the bubble before too long.
"Plan?"
Marcy asked.
"Not dying."
"Anything more detailed than that?"
"Not dying today."
She gave him a pointed look. Another pair of bullets zipped overhead while, outside the speed bubble, DeChamp's body hit the ground.
"We've got to get close to them," Wayne said, slipping one of his dueling canes out from the loop on his belt.
"That's going to be hard," Marcy said. "I think they're scared of you."
"Yeah?"
Wayne asked, sounding encouraged.
"You really think?"
"They're unloading enough ammunition to take down a small army," Marcy said, ducking as a bullet entered the speed bubble, "and they opened fire even though DeChamp was caught in the barrage. While I doubt he meant much to them, it indicates they were scared enough that they didn't dare waste a moment to wait for him to climb back into the grave."
Wayne nodded slowly, grinning.
"How about that? I got me a reputation. I wonder..."
Marcy glanced behind them. This grave was near several others that had been left open earlier, waiting for occupants.
"Can you get your speed bubble big enough to include one of those other graves from in here?"
He followed her gaze, then rubbed his chin.
"The closest one, maybe. If I drop this bubble and move to the back of this grave before making another..."
He couldn't move a bubble once it was in place and couldn't leave its confines without it dissipating.
"So we have to get them to come check on our corpses," Marcy said, "which might be hard if they're really that scared of you."
"Nah," Wayne said. "Might actually be easy."
"How?"
"Running out of time," Wayne said. "You still got that little pop gun in your purse?"
She pulled out the small pistol.
"It has terrible range," she said, "and only 2 shots."
"Don't matter none," Wayne said. "Once I drop this, fire it at the fellows, then be ready to move."
She nodded.
"Here we go," Wayne said.
The bubble dropped. Mists leaped back into motion, swirling above, and the sudden sound of gunfire pervaded the graveyard. DeChamp twitched and he gasped, eyes going glassy in the lantern light. Marcy waited until the assailants stopped shooting, the cracks of their guns echoing in the night. Then she leveled her little gun and squeezed off 2 shots toward the shadows. She ducked back down, uncertain what that was supposed to have accomplished.
"You realize we're now trapped and unarmed, Wayne?"
"Yep," he said. "But if those fellows are really bothered by my fearsome reputation..."
"What?" Marcy asked, glancing toward him as he peeked over the edge. A few cracks sounded as the dark figures fired back, but it wasn't as frantic as before. What was...
There,
Wayne said, leaping toward the back of the grave and then popping up a speed bubble.
Ha! They came prepared, they did. Good men.
Marcy risked peeking up again. She came almost face to face with a spinning piece of dynamite frozen in the air, the wick spraying sparks and smoke that mixed with the mists. She yelped, scrambling back. It was almost to the speed bubble.
Across we go,
Wayne said, taking off his top hat and tossing it out of their grave toward the next one. He scrambled after it. Marcy joined him, staying low and hoping that the attackers wouldn't notice. Wayne's speed bubble would make them blurs to the eyes of the men, but it was dark and the mists would help obscure things. She slid across and down into the other grave, which was deeper than the first. Wayne nodded to her, then dropped the bubble. Marcy pressed her back to the side of the grave, squeezed her eyes shut, plugged her ears, and counted in her head. She only reached two before an explosion shook the ground and dropped a wave of dirt into their grave.
Rusts. People must have heard that halfway across the city.
She glanced at Wayne, who took out his other dueling cane and twirled one in each hand. She heard footsteps scraping outside and imagined the shadowy attackers cautiously creeping up to check on people they'd supposedly killed.
Can you beat them on your own?
Marcy half-whispered, half-mouthed at Wayne. He grinned and mouthed back, Does a guy with no hands got itchy balls? He grabbed the side of the grave and hauled himself out. The mists above froze a moment later as Marcy was caught in a speed bubble, Wayne putting one up and trapping half the men nearby in it with him. She was accustomed, by now, to the sound of wood on a man's skull, but it still made her wince. The speed bubble dropped as someone managed to get a shot off, but more groaning and cursing followed. A short time later, Wayne appeared at the top of the grave, backlit by the flickering lantern in the mists. He shoved his dueling canes into their loops, then knelt and held out his hand. Marcy reached up to accept his help from the grave.
Actually, Wayne said, not taking her hand, I was hoping you'd hand me my hat.
We'll send for your carriage, Lord Waxillium, said the assistant house steward. We're terribly sorry about the unfortunate occasion of your lady's distress. You're certain she ate nothing here that might disagree with her?
She had only drinks, Wax said, and a few of those at that.
The cook relaxed visibly. She towed one of the maids away by the arm as soon as she saw that Wax had noticed her. He stood in the doorway of a guest chamber, and behind him Steris lay on the bed, eyes closed. The assistant steward, an aged terrace woman in the proper robes, clicked her tongue softly, looking over her shoulder toward the vanishing cook and maid. Despite her displeasure, Wax could tell that she too was relieved to hear that the food at the party couldn't be blamed. No need for the other guests to worry. A piercing voice echoed down the hallway. Someone, a man with a high-pitched tone, was announcing the reception's speaker. Wax could hear easily. The introducer was assisted by electric amplifiers. It seemed the Tarxel girl's devices had spread even to New Saren. The assistant steward took an unconscious step back toward the ballroom.
Feel free to go, Wax told her. We'll wait here for a half hour or so to be certain my lady is well rested, and by then our carriage will certainly be waiting.
If you're certain...
I am, Wax said. Just see to it that we're not disturbed. Miss Harms grows most discomforted by noises when she's ill.
The steward bowed and retreated down the hallway toward the ballroom. Wax clicked the door shut, then approached the bed where Steris lay. She cracked an eye open, then glanced at the door to be sure it was closed.
How do you feel? Wax asked.
Nauseated,
Steris said, half propping herself on one elbow.
That was a tad hasty on my part, wasn't it?
Haste was appreciated, Wax said, checking the wall clock. I'll give it a few minutes to make sure the hall is clear, then duck out. I'm not certain how long Kelesina will be away, but I'll need to move quickly to learn anything.
Steris nodded.
Do you think they might have her here? Your sister, I mean.
Unlikely, Wax said. But anything is possible. I'll settle for a lead of any sort.
What's she like?
She seemed like your average, full-of-herself noblewoman, certain that—
Not Lady Calacina, Waxilium. Your sister.
I— Wax swallowed, checking the clock. I haven't seen her in decades, Steris.
But you worked so eagerly to rescue her.
He sighed, settling down beside Steris.
She was always the bold one when we were kids. I was careful, earnest, trying so hard to figure out what to do. And Telson? She seemed to have it all in hand. Until I left the village and she stayed.
More Terrace than you, then?
Maybe. I always thought she hated the place, considering how often she found excuses to escape. Then she stayed.
He shook his head.
I never knew her, Steris. Not as I should have. I was too focused on myself. I can't help feeling that I failed everyone. Mother, father, Telson herself, by not remaining close to her when I was out in the roughs. And I'm failing them again by leaving her under my uncle's control.
Steris, still lying on the bed, squeezed his hand.
I'll find her, Wax said. I'll make it right. I ran to the roughs thinking I didn't need any of them. But as the years pass, Steris, I find I want less and less to be alone. I can't explain it, I guess. She's my family. My only family.
Outside, a new voice started talking. Introduction done, Lord Severington had begun his speech. Wax glanced at the clock, then stood.
All right. I need to go and explore while everyone else is distracted by the speech.
Steris nodded, then swung her feet over the side of the bed and took a deep breath.
You should wait here, Wax said. This could be dangerous.
Have you forgotten what I said last night? She asked.
The safest place to be is most certainly not near me, Steris, Wax said.
Regardless, you may need to escape quickly. There won't be time to come back for me. And if you're spotted, someone will wonder why you are alone. But if we're together, we can say we were just leaving and were looking for the way to our carriage.
Those were good arguments.
He reluctantly nodded, motioning for her to follow. She did so with alacrity, waiting beside the door as he opened it and peeked out. He could hear Lord Severington's voice even better.
Time to show those in Ellendale that their tyranny is not only unjust, it is against the will of the survivor, who died in the name of freedom.
The hallway was empty. Wax stepped out, Steris at his side.
Try not to look like you're sneaking, he suggested softly.
She nodded, and together they moved down a long hallway set with brass gas lamps that had been converted to electricity. According to the mansion layout he had memorized, the ballroom and these small guest quarters were in their own wing to the east. If they moved west along this hallway, took this corner... They passed under an archway into the mansion's central atrium, where a stream ran through the center of the mansion, diverted from one of the waterfalls, then cascading down a set of arranged rocks covered in chimes. Only a few lights glowed on the walls, giving the atrium a dusk-like feeling.
That humidity must be awful for the mansion's woodwork, Steris noted. What practical reason could they have to run a river through the middle of their house?
I'm sure the reasons aren't practical at all, Wax said.
Nearby, a maid passed in from another doorway. She saw him and froze. Wax glared at her, standing up straight, putting as much nobleman's sneer into his expression as he could muster. The young woman didn't challenge them, but ducked her head and scuttled away, carrying her stack of linens. They picked their way through the dim atrium. Above, broad glass windows would have given a view of the sky, but instead mist spun and swirled. Wax raised his fingers in greeting toward the distant mists, but stopped himself. Harmony watched through those mists. Harmony the impotent. Harmony the meaningless. He set his jaw and turned away from the windows, leading Steris along a path in the indoor garden, which was set with small rocks and plants. From his maps, he guessed that Calacina would be up on the second floor somewhere. As they followed the path northward, walking along the stream, he spotted a second-floor balcony.
Honestly, Steris muttered, how can they even know if the water is sanitary? A river running through their gardens wasn't enough? It has to go through the house itself?
Wax smiled, studying that balcony. I'm going to scout up ahead there. Speak loudly if someone confronts you. That will warn me, and I'll sneak back.
Very well, Steris said.
He dug in his pocket for a few coins, feeling old-fashioned as he burned steel and prepared to jump.
Do you want something more substantial? Steris asked.
He glanced at her, then down at her purse. They searched your purse.
That they did, she said,
then took the hem of her skirt, lifting it up to the side and revealing a small handgun strapped to her thigh.
I worried they'd do something like that, so I made other plans.
Wax grinned. I could get used to having you around, Steris. She blushed in the dim light.
I might, need your help getting the thing off.
He knelt down, realizing that she'd used approximately 7 rolls of tape to strap the gun in place. Also, being Steris, she'd worn shorts under the dress, in case she had to do what she was doing. 2 pairs, judging by the bit of cloth he saw peeking out from under the top one. Wax set to work extricating the gun.
I see you didn't want this coming off accidentally.
I kept imagining it falling out and firing, Steris said, mid-dance.
Wax grunted, working at her thigh beneath her dress.
You realize that if this were a play, this is exactly the point where someone would walk in on us.
Lord Waxillium, Steris said, what kind of theater have you been attending?
The kind you find in the roughs, Wax said, yanking the gun free.
It proved to be one of his riotings, a 22 caliber 6-shot he kept in his gun case but rarely used. It would do. He stood up, letting Steris settle her skirt back down.
Nice work.
I tried a shotgun first, she said, blushing. You should have seen me try to walk with one of those on my leg.
Stay out of sight, if you can, he told her,
then dropped a coin and launched himself toward the upper balcony. Marcy stepped into the gravekeeper's shack, clicking the door closed behind her. Wayne looked up from breaking the legs off a chair.
Is that necessary? Marcy asked.
Dunno, he said, snapping off another one. It's fun, though. How are our toffs?
Marcy glanced out the window toward where a group of the local constables were carting away the last of the thugs. It turned out that setting off dynamite in the middle of the city was a fine way to get the attention of the authorities.
They don't know anything, she said. Hired muscle, paid and sent to do the hit. The ones who hired them mentioned your name, which turns out to have been a mistake.
Oh, I'm famous,
Wayne said happily, snapping off another leg. The hut had been thoroughly ransacked, drawers ripped out, cushions slit, furniture in shambles. Wayne looked at the chair leg he'd broken, apparently checking to see if it was hollow, then tossed it over his shoulder.
We can try to follow the payments to those men, Marcy continued, but I suspect that Suit was too careful for this to be traced, and there's no sign of the runner boy.
Wayne grunted, stomping on the floor in one section, then taking a few steps and stomping again.
The police brought an allomancer, Marcy continued, and there's no metal in that grave, so if the spike was ever there, it isn't now.
She sighed, leaning back against the wall.
Rust and ruin. I hope Waxillium is having more luck than we are.
Wayne kicked a hole in the floor with the heel of his boot. Marcy perked up, then walked over as he fished around in a compartment he'd found.
Aha!
He exclaimed.
What is it?
Marcy asked. Wayne brought out a bottle.
The champ's hidden booze stash.
That's all?
All? It's great! A fellow like that hides his booze well. Too many other workers around to swipe the stuff.
So we're at a dead end.
Well, there's an account book on the desk there that I found under a false bottom in the drawer, Wayne noted, taking a swig of the dark liquid he'd found. Lists everybody what paid the people here for a grave robbing in the last few years.
Marcy started.
When did you find that?
First, Wayne said. Hardly had to search for it. The booze, though. That they hid well. Good priorities, these folks.
Marcy stepped over some stuffing from one of the sofas and picked up the ledger. It didn't belong to DeChamp, but to the graveyard as a whole. It listed plots, what had been found in them, and to whom it had been sold.
It's so the boss of the place can keep track of what they've sold and what they haven't, Marcy thought.
and to keep track of his minions, to be certain they didn't get any ideas about making their own side business of grave robbing. Next to an entry from a few days back was a note from the manager. If anyone comes looking to investigate this plot, send to me immediately. Marcy closed the book, then fished from her pocket the paper that listed workers at the graveyard.
Come on, she said to Wayne. We have one more stop to make tonight.
Lower left quadrant of the New Ascendancy broadsheet. Drink to the health of Ellendale. Brand whiskey has been grown and distilled exclusively in the outer cities. It's not sold in Ellendale, so it never passes through the lion's den, and is therefore never taxed. It tastes better than anything central, and because it's made local, you can rest easy knowing that your coin hasn't lined any tyrant's pocket. Long live Brand. Looking for adventure? Basin Bill is looking for you. Hundreds of cities were lost at the final ascension. Magical artifacts, riches, and fame can be yours. Apply in person at Basin Bill's old-time pub and playhouse. Do your metal tools speak to you? Hello. Your neighbors probably don't want to hear about it, but we do. Visit 27 Raylan Place. Ask for K or N. Bring the talking metal with you. Potential allomancers needed to test new metal alloys. Latest scientific breakthrough has created an entirely safe method of discovering new allomantic abilities. Unlock your latent potential. Apply at Tenement 1447, Crate District, around the corner from Apprisible's animal rendering. Write scientific fantasies. B. Sabler Fills, playwright of A Hero for All Ages, shows you how. Inquire at the University of New Saren. The ghastly gondola continued. The monks of Bazkor had trained me well. Their practiced moves, designed to get a leecher close enough to touch another allomancer and drain them of their reserves. But it was the ballet lessons that enabled my jump from the platform onto the moving gondola. I landed perfectly on the small ridge surrounding the bottom of the car and managed a firm grip on the outer door handles. I was safe for the moment, but the ridge I'd landed on was only a few inches wide. If I didn't find a way inside the gondola soon, even my ballet-enhanced toe strength would fail, dropping me almost 100 feet to the city below, where rooftops glowed in the failing sun like boxings in an open purse. Ethereal light emanated from inside the car, casting the haunted man's shadow against the windows. Each burst showed him striving to ready some arcane device, presumably to provide his escape. From my satchel I retrieved the device I had stolen from him when we last grappled. Covered in strange symbols and weirdly warm to the touch, it was much heavier than it appeared, and I had no clue how to operate it. But ignorance is no match for invention. I slammed the rod of metal into the door glass, shattering it. An uncanny explosion answered me, and my Bazkor reflexes pulled me abruptly to the side as a bolt howled past. It was neither an arrow nor a bullet, but a blast of pure energy shaped like a ghost. Its entirely too human scream made the hairs on my neck stand on end, and the frame of the broken door rusted and crumbled in the wake of its passing. What manner of man could harness the powers of the dead? If the energy had enveloped me as well, would I also have disintegrated in an instant? I breathed deep and rushed into the car. Strange mechanical devices littered the floor, and above them stood the haunted man.